On our TV show, every appraisal of every episode in every season ends pretty much the same way.
It's worth between $6,000 and $8,000.
No way!
With a price.
$20,000
$30,000.
$20,000 to $35,000.
But what sometimes gets lost...
Are you kidding me?
Granted, on a rather small percentage of our audience.
Are you really serious?
Is that we don't actually buy or sell anything on WGBH's Antiques Roadshow.
Oh my God, already.
Our appraisers are only giving estimates of what they think an object is worth.
What we do is technically called a verbal approximation of value.
You may remember my boss, Roadshow executive producer Marsha Bemko.
Shorthand VAV, some will say.
And as good as our appraisers are, a verbal approximation of value is really just theoretical science until someone actually ponies up the dough and buys the thing.
And have we learned that lesson here? Because, you know, we've seen it go in both directions. It's an unpredictable world because what you don't know is the demand.
Yeah.
Who wants that thing that costs that much money?
So in this episode, what we're going to do is follow a little piece of movie history all the way from the appraisal table to the auction block to find out what it's really worth.
$1,300 bid looking for $1,400. Any advance going once?
And also...
Twice.
Who on earth would actually pay that much for it?
Third last call.
I'm Adam Monahan, producer for WGBH's Antiques Roadshow, and this is Detours. Today, a soldier for sale. The Atlas Obscura podcast is your definitive guide to the world's hidden wonders. A village in India where everyone's name is a song. A boiling river in the Peruvian Amazon. A spacecraft cemetery in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Every day, the Atlas Obscura podcast transports you to a real place in the world that will surprise and amaze you. Like and subscribe to the Atlas Obscura podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Funding for Detours comes from American Cruise Lines, proud sponsor of Antiques Roadshow. On an American Cruise Lines journey along the Columbia and Snake Rivers, travelers retrace the route forged by Lewis and Clark more than 200 years ago. American Cruise Lines' fleet of modern riverboats travel through American landscapes to historic landmarks where you can experience local customs and cuisine. To learn more, visit AmericanCruiseLines.com. Ancestry can help you discover your origins, build a family tree, and search historical records, giving you more ways to learn about your family's past and connect over their stories. Visit Ancestry.com to learn more. The sale we're following today is all about a toy from a movie about toys called Babes in Toyland, released in 1934. Can you give us a brief synopsis of what the film is and where these are used in it?
Yes. It's kind of ridiculous, to be honest.
Our appraiser, Laura Woolley, is an expert in movie memorabilia.
You know, the premise is obviously that they live in Toyland, and so that famous song, Toyland, Toyland, da 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 da. That's kind of the opening of the whole movie. And you have Ali D and Stanny Dum.
Good morning, Mother Peep.
Good morning, Ali.
Played by the great comedic duo of Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy, better known as Laurel and Hardy.
Who work at the toy maker's shop in Toyland.
Hello, everybody. How's everything?
And the big punchline of the whole film is...
Wait until you see the wooden soldiers we made for you.
That they answered the call for Santa, who ordered 600 one-foot-high soldiers for the children at Christmas.
600 soldiers at 1 foot.
And they accidentally wrote it down as 100 six-foot-high soldiers.
I thought you said 100 soldiers at 6 foot high.
Laura did warn us this movie is somewhat ridiculous.
You got the order all wrong.
But these soldiers are important because there are also bad guys that need contending with. The bogeymen.
Which do look like kind of overgrown monkey people.
And this is where the giant toy soldiers come in.
The wooden soldiers.
Ali D and Stanny Dumb come to the rescue and animate these soldiers, and they kick all the bogeymen out of Toyland, and everybody's happy, and they save the day. So, you know.
I could see why this was hugely popular back in 1930, whatever. Okay, I have to level with you. I have never heard of this film before. Am I alone here? Has everyone else seen Babes in Toyland?
Babes in Toyland?
I took a quick poll of the office.
That's a definite no from me.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, right?
Right.
Do you know the film? Like, of course not, right?
No, it's a hard no.
No, unfortunately not.
Seriously, anybody?
Yes, I have.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out there's a trick to this game.
I remember they used to show it around Christmas time on WPIX in New York.
Ah, you're a New Yorker.
It helps if you ask a New Yorker.
There was this black and white movie that growing up in New York was on every year after the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Channel 11, WPIX New York.
And we watched it religiously as a family.
This is one of my dearest friends, by the way. Roadshow's line producer, Jill Giles.
It was that generation's version of Home Alone before there was Home Alone.
At least for Jill and a few million other weirdos in the greater tri-state area. But it's a film from 1934.
No,
like, why the
they
hell?
They still play it.
This is true, by the way. On Thanksgiving Day 2019, Babes in Toyland, also known as March of the Wooden Soldiers, aired on WPIX Channel 11, not once, but twice.
It's like Thanksgiving didn't happen if the March of the Wooden Soldiers didn't happen. So when I saw this stuff in Sacramento, I walked by and I was like, oh, like I stopped dead in my tracks. Like,
you knew what it was.
I knew what it was exactly.
Jill is talking about one of our events from last year in Sacramento, California.
Oh, sorry, Laura Woolley, the Collector's Lab.
Our appraiser Laura Woolley was there as well, and she also knew exactly what she was looking at.
Obviously, we're looking at some toy soldiers.
Yes.
But these are not just your Christmas decorations. Where did you get these?
My grandfather worked for Hal Roach Studios,
which produced the film Babes in Toyland.
He was kind of second in command there. And these are from Babes in Toyland with Laurel and Hardy.
She pulled one out, and this is great. And then she kept pulling more out.
We got 10 of them.
10 toy soldiers. Laura was excited, and for a few reasons.
This is a very key moment in film history for this particular type of technology.
So remember, in the climax of the film, these soldiers come to life. Well, they did that using stop-motion animation, the effect where a filmmaker takes tons of pictures of the same thing, moving it just slightly in each frame. In Hollywood in 1934, it was the hot new thing.
I mean, there were certain stop-motion animation effects that were being experimented with in the late 19th century. And then suddenly in 1933, King Kong comes out. And Willis O'Brien's stop motion animation sequences in that film were a huge reason that it was so successful.
Babes in Toyland came out the very next year.
My feeling is, and I don't have anything to support this, but my guess is that made such a huge splash that they perhaps decided to incorporate some of that into this film.
When the production of Babes in Toyland wrapped, our guest grandfather simply grabbed a bunch of soldiers and took them home.
And they always came out at Christmas.
Her name is Roberta. We talked by phone after the event.
And they always were a decoration on the mantle. I mean, I never played with them.
The wonderful little irony here is that the figures they shot the scene with are actually about 1 foot tall, which, as you may remember, is what Santa Claus wanted them to be in the film, except they got the order wrong and so on. Plus, they're not even wooden.
They're lead, and so it wouldn't be something you would give a kid to play with.
In any case, at the event, Laura walks Roberta through her thinking on these little lead men.
So to have a piece that ties into that kind of importance.
That they are from this cult classic holiday movie and are an early example of stop-motion animation.
Also from a Laurel and Hardy film?
Yes.
It's kind of ticking a lot of boxes for me, and I think collectors would be very into them.
Just how into them?
At least $10,000 to $15,000 individually.
Wow.
$10,000 to $15,000 each. What was your reaction to that?
You could have picked me up off the floor.
She had no idea they were worth this much.
Well, they're going to be taken very good care of.
So, the interview wraps.
Is that good?
Our crew asked them to pose the soldiers for a few photos.
Action shots.
Action shot. You can blow the bugle, too.
Laura goes back to appraising more collectibles, and Roberta takes her toy soldiers back home. As far as we know, they're going right back into the closet until Christmas.
All right, so Sam, you were the one to get this email, and if you could just read it to me.
This is an email from Laura Woolley, the appraiser who did the original assignment.
8 months later, our senior producer, Sam Farrell, gets this email from Laura.
In other news,
it includes two important bits of information about our toy soldier. First,
Witherell's has this soldier from our Sacramento taping coming up for the sale on the 16th of January.
That's only 10 days away when we get this email.
Below is the link to the full cataloging I did for Brian.
Witherell's is an auction house in Sacramento, just a couple miles from where we had that original event. It's owned by longtime appraiser for our show, Brian Witherell.
And this happened to walk in. We get lots of items, lots of junk, lots of good things. And in this case, I would have never guessed that that was worth that kind of money.
Roberta has decided to sell just one of her soldiers.
I was thinking, you know, I'll try for one. I probably won't do any more, but I'll try for one.
So she told Brian about Laura's appraisal.
And when I knew it was Laura, I was just like, well, if Laura said it, we're good to go. I'm happy to take it. And we went through a few scenarios about when to sell it.
In an ideal world, the soldier would go up for sale around the holidays and probably in New York. Laura could picture it in her mind.
Perhaps an auction right before Christmas time, because this is kind of a cult classic Christmas favorite. So it would have been a wonderful time to put it up for sale.
But Roberta had other plans.
My grandson graduates from high school next year, and I want to do a nice trip.
To France, a few short months away in May.
And she wanted the money beforehand.
So the auction is set for January 16th in Sacramento. Not exactly ideal conditions.
They've been sitting around for 80-some years. So I thought, well, let's just try it. And so we'll see what happens.
At this point, Laura is brought on to do an official written appraisal for the auction house. And she does some more digging. This brings us to the second piece of news she shared in that email. Again, my colleague Sam will provide the dramatic reading.
And in doing research for the catalog on it, I discovered that prior to our taping, there was only one of these soldiers known to survive.
Only one other soldier is known to exist.
It's owned by a big Laurel and Hardy historian, but his is missing the feet.
What? No feet? That's garbage.
It's gonna blow people's minds to find out there are 10 more out there.
Thanks, Sam. So, despite the timing, despite the location, Laura is cautiously optimistic that the Laurel and Hardy superfans are going to come out of the woodwork for this one.
You know, it's a tricky market because it is so small. So, really the key to something doing really well in this market is making sure the right people know about it.
After the break, we go looking for the right people.
I was raised on Laurel and Hardy.
I've been collecting since I was 17. I've got them all.
Okay, so our little lead soldier is going up for auction in just a few days, and we've appraised this thing at $10,000 to $15,000, which, to be honest, feels like a lot.
Shut the door, people.
$10,000 to
$15,000. That's a lot of money.
Could you imagine?
You could buy a car.
Glad you're still with me, Marsh.
Why would you want to spend that much money on a Laurel and Hardy thing? I have to ask myself.
Exactly. And so, before we get to the sale itself, I want to at least attempt to understand what could be so amazing about this comedy duo from the 1930s that some collector would shell out the equivalent of a brand new automobile.
Turn left onto Walden Avenue, then turn left onto Collins Road.
Just imagine my surprise when I learned that there is an international organization of Laurel and Hardy fans, and one of its oldest chapters meets about 9 miles from my house. So I hop in my car, which happens to be worth much less than a Babes in Toyland figure, and go there.
Check.
All right.
Great.
Let's go see if we can meet some Laurel and Hardy fans.
They meet in the basement of a church. The space has one of those serving windows between the kitchen and the meeting area for putting food out. And when I get there, a jovial gentleman in glasses is setting up a pair of old film projectors right on the counter.
So once I get it threaded into the reel, this is the sound of motion picture film.
My name is Scott McGillivray, and I am the chairman of the Boston chapter of Sons of the Desert, the International Laurel and Hardy Society.
The society is so named for the duo's classic film, Sons of the Desert.
Where they belong to a lodge, and they have to go to the convention of the Sons of the Desert.
In keeping with the desert theme, the chapter is actually called a tent, and the chairman, Scott, is known as the Grand Sheik.
I am the Grand Sheik of the Boston tent.
It turns out there are hundreds of these tents all over the world.
Dancing Cuckoos in Detroit, one in Mexico City, the Bullfighters, Bonnie Scotland in Glasgow.
This one is called the Boston Brats, founded in 1967.
We used to have one in a prison called Pardon Us. No two tents operate the same. Some have dinner meetings where they might show an hour's worth of film. They sing, they have toasts with cocktails.
But Scott is something of a purist.
We do strictly film. We don't do the toasts or sing the song. You just come here and it's like coming to a revival house. You're watching 3 hours of movies.
Well, I had told my wife I'd be home for dinner, but I guess that's not happening.
Well, we're getting up to showtime.
All right. And with that, the crowd of maybe 15 people start putting out folding chairs. Among the crowd are some true Laurel and Hardy lifers.
We took our honeymoon at the Ulverston Sons of the Desert Convention in 1984.
And you went to this willingly.
Yes, she blinked twice
if you want me to call for help. Some all-around movie buffs.
I was working in a video store, and one guy came in and started talking about the Sons of the Desert.
And even some out-of-town visitors.
I live in Sarasota, Florida.
I'm the Grand Sheik for the Night Owls tent in Enfield, Connecticut.
All here for a night of movies.
Oh, yeah.
Scott leads off with a silent short as latecomers trickle in. Then begins the Laurel and Hardy program with one of their early films, With Love and Hisses from 1927.
They were Laurel and Hardy. They were members of the Hal Roach Stock Company. So they're in the same movie, but they're not Laurel and Hardy yet.
Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy were both established comedians when they started working together, just before this film was made. And like so many great duos, they found they were better together. Laurel was slight and boyish. Hardy was big and boisterous. Laurel wore a bow tie. Hardy wore a necktie. The pair just worked.
The physicality of them together is incredible.
What comedy duo, you know, has lasted this long?
They just live on and on, you know.
Their career together lasted almost 30 years, from silent films in black and white all the way to color films with full sound.
You.
The last known footage of the two men is a silent home movie from 1956, just a year before Oliver Hardy died. Stan Laurel never performed again, but in 1965, just 2 years before his own death, he helped to establish the very first chapter of the Sons of the Desert. Since I first started looking into this soldier, I've been trying to figure out why people still like Laurel and Hardy so much. And everyone at the church that night pretty much gave me the same answer.
You can see that they, you know, really appreciated each other.
Because they liked each other.
The sweetness and the friendship of them, the loyalty.
The two guys could bond like that.
Just pure fun.
In the last film, Scott shows that night the entire premise is that Hardy has a cold and Laurel tries to cure it. That's it. A 20-minute caper about making your friend feel better.
They were lovable.
The $10,000 question, of course, is whether that kind of devotion will show up on auction day.
For the right person, the right audience, It's a super collectible, and it's got the whole Laurel and Hardy community buzzing.
There are some collectors in the crowd tonight.
I could fill this room twice over with the stuff I have, you know.
And I do sense some temptation.
There aren't that many of them.
But no one seems ready to really go the distance on this soldier.
I just know that it's out of my, you know, we've got mortgages and
With 2 days to go until the auction, we still have no idea if Laura and Witherell's have succeeded in getting the word out to the right people. The starting price for the soldier is only $5,000. So for this thing to get anywhere close to that 10 to 15 range, we're going to need at least two serious bidders playing off each other. I haven't found a single one. But we do have one more lead from Laura's email.
I discovered that prior to our taping, there was only one of these soldiers known to survive.
The other soldier.
It's in the hands of a Laurel and Hardy historian.
And if we can just track down this historian, maybe he knows who else is looking to buy one.
I honestly don't know how to pronounce his name. It's actually spelled S-K-R-E-T-V-E-D-T.
Skrevedit?
Too many consonants.
Seriously.
Randy Skrevedit?
That's right. Randy Skrevedit.
I'm Randy Skrevedit, and I'm the author of Laurel and Hardy, The Magic Behind the Movies, which tells how Laurel and Hardy made every one of their 106 films together.
So Randy gives us his story.
Many, many years ago, when I was in my teens and early 20s, I was a good friend to many people who worked on the Laurel and Hardy films. I got to interview about 65 of them for the book. One of those was a wonderful lady named Venice Lloyd, and she was the widow of the team's frequent cameraman, a man named Art Lloyd. One day I was visiting her at her home, and she came to me and she said, well, you know, Artie brought this home from the studio one day, and I've been using it as a Christmas decoration ever since, but I think you should have it.
It was one of the toy soldiers.
So that's my story, basically, about the soldier.
So that's how you got yours.
Yes. I thought I had the only one, and of course I'm glad to know that there are still several survivors from that campaign, and who knows, maybe someday maybe my soldier can get together with his old buddies and quaff a few milkshakes as they reminisce about getting the bogeyman out of Toyland.
Now, as Laura noted in her email, Randy's soldier is not in perfect condition.
The shoes have been rather rudely cut off.
And it turns out there's a good reason for that.
So I went to another one of my Laurel and Hardy co-worker buddies, a man by the name of Roy Seawright.
Who actually did the stop-motion animation of these soldiers.
He said that they shot them in a squash court behind Stage 4. And he said the reason that this doesn't have its feet is because these soldiers were all connected in rows.
So there was some kind of rod connecting all the feet in a row.
He said that way I only had to move one row at a time. I didn't have to move every individual soldier.
Somehow Roberta's soldiers survived with their feet intact. According to Randy, the one up for sale appears to be in absolutely pristine condition.
And we shall see what the auction brings. I already know a couple of people who are bidding.
This is how we get in touch with Danny.
My name is Danny Backer, and I'm a Laurel and Hardy holic.
At last, we found our bidder. We talk a day before the auction.
No, I'm kidding. That's I thought I was in a 12-step program here. No, my name is Danny Backer, and I've been collecting Laurel and Hardy memorabilia since I was 5 years old.
And you're not a old guy. Like, you're not old.
I'm 42.
Yeah, and you're not from the 30s, like, and that's what's blowing my mind here. So tell me about
it. It's what you call a misspent youth, Adam, and I'm sure you run into a lot of people that have had it. it's sort of like a way I could hold a piece or have this connection to something that I love so much and was such a big part of my life growing up.
So as you can imagine, Danny is pretty jazzed about these toy soldiers.
I've always wanted something from that film, and something like this is so iconic.
He had even dreamed of making Randy an offer on his soldier.
But there was no chance, because I think he's kind of going to be buried with it. That's what I don't know. You know, it's sort of one of the things. You know, they say you can't take it with you.
Yeah.
Well, he's taking it with him, I think.
So Danny is ready to bid. But how much?
I want to tell you, some people have a lot of money. So it's very easy for them to acquire very high-end pieces because they've got these deep pockets. I've never had that. You know, the thing I have going for me in the cosmos is that today's my birthday and tomorrow's the auction. So I'm hoping that, you know, the god, the birthday gods are smiling at me, you know. But, you know, someone might want it more and have deeper pockets, and then I have to just kind of do my best.
That night, we all dream of toy soldiers.
I would have never guessed that that was worth that kind of money.
Making sure the right people know about it.
I mean, maybe nobody wants it.
So you just don't know.
And then it's the day of the sale, the day when all the guesstimating and theoretical science becomes a concrete number on a check.
Don't you think, is anybody else coming to join this party?
I don't know if anybody's coming.
Is anybody else?
At the Roadshow office, we set up a viewing party for the auction.
Okay.
Melanie's practically here.
Okay.
It's just like a Super Bowl party, except there's no beer and it's not nearly as fun. But let me tell you, we are extremely excited for the action to start.
Lot number 99.
Brian was kind enough to record the actual auction for us on his phone.
For 900. Is there any further bidding at $850? Going once, twice, third, last call.
The way an auction works these days is you've got bids coming from multiple places.
Lot number 101.
There are absentee bids, which are placed beforehand and called out by the auctioneer himself.
And I have 850 absentee, I need 900.
Then you've got people bidding live, by phone.
1,400 on the phone, now 1,500.
Online.
1,700 on the internet, now 1,800.
And of course, in person.
1,800 with live auctioneers, now 1,900, I'm sorry.
For the soldier, we know that Danny will be bidding by phone. Beyond that, we have no idea who is in on this thing.
Lot number 102.
Everyone, it's happening.
Antiques Roadshow Discovery here in Sacramento turned up this.
And suddenly, it's game time.
And I have absentee bid of $9,000, and I need $9,500 to advance.
So we know there's at least one absentee bidder involved, and it sounds like there's someone bidding live in the room, too.
$10,000 I have, $11,000 to the phone.
That could be Danny on the phone.
I have $12,000 absentee. I'm looking for $13,000 anyway.
Come on, Danny.
Any advance going once, twice, third and last call. Sold it for $12,000. Bidder number 1597 for $12,000. Lot number 103. Getting into the jewelry
now. Hi, Danny. It's Adam Monahan from Antiques Roadshow.
Adam, how are you?
Good. How are you?
You just called me before I was jumping off the bridge.
I take it you are not the winning bidder at $12,000.
No, you know, it went a little higher than I wanted to go. And I'd probably rather have my life because my wife would have killed me.
Yeah, so now you get to go home.
Yeah, exactly. Now I get to live and enjoy life.
And what about our mystery bidder?
It was an absentee bid, and it'll take me a couple of minutes, but I'll try to figure it out on my phone.
So, at $12,000, the soldier goes to...
Call me Robert.
Okay. That works for me. Thank you, Robert. And to his credit, Robert's been waiting a long time for this opportunity.
You know, I'm almost 60 years old. I've been watching this film every year since, you know, I've been a little kid.
Did you know right away that you were going to go for this one?
Yes.
Okay.
But you know what? It's something, and I don't know if my kids will be into it when I go down the road, but then if they want to sell it, they can sell it.
Not sure if you're listening, Danny, but who knows? You might just get another crack at this one. In other news, Laura is greatly relieved to know her appraisal was spot on.
Newsflash, breaking
Breaking news. Laura Woolley actually knows what she's talking about, not just making things up at the show.
Laura Woolley, not full of crap.
And Roberta gets all the money she needs for her trip.
My son and his wife and my grandson.
Well, I'm so excited for you and your family that you're going to get to have this trip.
Thank you.
Going into your roadshow experience, did you ever think it would end like this when you came to our show?
No, none. No, not at all. It was a wonderful experience. Wonderful.
This is like an amazing story.
I think we're heroes.
I think that we're heroes and that we like bring this family together. You think this little soldier is like, what is it? How many inches is it? 10 inches
It's like
tall?
A 10-inch tall.
10-inch tall thing.
Yeah.
This little guy comes along. He's worth all this money. He's marching her right across the ocean.
Yeah.
I love it.
I feel like we're heroes and I'm very excited. Yeah. If it hadn't sold, we would have just buried this.
We would have, if we hadn't sold, you wouldn't have known we were even
Nobody
trying to cover it.
Nobody would have known this at all. But no, it went for $12,000, so it worked.
It worked for her.
Yeah, it worked for her. All right, well, thanks, Marsh.
Thanks, Adam.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
In case you're wondering, yes, Roberta's trip was delayed due to COVID-19, but she's still planning to go see her grandson as soon as she can. Maybe even in time for Christmas.
I know love is not a walk in the park. It's a once in a century storm. Winds will never blow us apart. In our once in a century storm.
That's it for this episode of Detours. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the story of a suspicious Mayan artifact. In the meantime, you can watch the original appraisal of Roberta's soldiers online at wgbh.org/detours. You can also watch the full movie, Babes in Toyland, on a certain streaming service that will go unnamed unless they decide to sponsor our show. Detours is a production of WGBH in Boston and PRX. Our producer and sound designer is Ian Koss. Our assistant producer is Isabel Hibbert. Nina Przuki is the managing producer of podcasts at WGBH. Marsha Bemko is executive producer of Detours. I'm your host and senior producer, Adam Monahan. Our theme music is Once in a Century Storm by Will Daly from the album National Throat. Thank you to you all for listening. Have a good one.